Good afternoon, little Saigon, Seattle, and other places in between, and other regions of what I now sometimes call sideways Seattle. Why do I call it sideways Seattle? Because that's how it feels. It doesn't feel like it's right side up. It doesn't feel like it's oriented correctly. It feels sideways. It is Friday, August the 30th, 2019. Friday before Labor Day weekend. I know many of you are probably going to head out this weekend and go on various trips out into the hinterland to visit family or friends, to enjoy yourselves, and I hope you do. I hope you enjoy yourself. I hope you go out there and you're happy. I will say that the last couple weeks have been kind of weird, but I don't know how much of this I want to go into. The other day I was at work, and I was working on a problem. And when I say the other day, I mean Tuesday. I was working on a problem, and it occurred to me that my entire professional life was one toxic, absurd pile of bullshit. I mean, I was basically talking to a technical support professional about a premier product that this company, the company I was working for as a contractor, created, meaning they built it. Meaning they should know how it fucking works. And this technical support person was asking me to help them solve my problem. And when I say this product that they sell, I'm talking about the cloud. And I gotta tell you, it's kind of disconcerting when you find out that a premier product that some company makes a lot of money off of is not very well trusted by the employees of the company that makes said product. That's kind of fucking interesting. And I could tell you, I could say, well, what if that's just the only thing, but it's not. That whole place feels gross. It kills me from the inside out. And frankly, waiting for the bus now is kind of toxic. I was waiting for the bus the other day. And I swear, I know this sounds crazy. Someone's going to accuse me of some sort of really profound mental illness from what I'm about to say. But I was waiting for the bus, and suddenly the clouds opened up a little, and this bolt of light comes through, and it felt like my stomach was being cooked. The last time I felt like that was 2005, I believe, when I was getting a CT scan of my midregion. I felt the warmness in my thorax, in my interior. Now, here's the thing, folks. I don't know what you believe or what you want to believe. I know some of you think that global warming is a hoax. You know what? It could very well be. I have no idea. I think some of you believe everything Al Gore says, despite the fact that Al Gore's a tool, a complete freak, a complete lie, a complete joke. And if global warming is indeed true, Al Gore was created to make fun of it. He literally is the perfect disinformation agent. He is a buffoon. And frankly, so is this Ocasio-Cortez saying we got 10 years left. Maybe she's serious, but she looks like a buffoon. And the type of mail-order buffoon that our government loves to use to take a real issue and make it seem like a non-issue. But I was sitting at the bus the other day. And I swear, I was just sitting outside for 20 minutes in the sun. And folks, when I was a kid, 20 minutes in the sun during the summer was nothing. Nothing. You didn't have to put on any sunburn lotion. If you got any skin color from that, you know, yeah, that would have been weird. But 20 minutes was nothing when I was a kid. Of course, that was the 1970s, and we still had a functioning ozone layer. But now you go out 20 minutes and you run the risk of UVC, which NASA says isn't hitting us. That's the next wavelength higher than UVB, and that's ultraviolet C. And the only thing higher frequency than that is X-ray. And now, yeah, I sit out there on a certain day and I feel like I'm getting the UVC and probably some X-rays too. So the job itself is kind of killing me. The only thing I can tell you about this job, if you've been listening to my podcast, I try to say it because it was the one thing that kept me thinking I could make it work, is that I kind of like the people I worked with. But they're all contractors, and frankly, you know, they're all in the same boat that I was in, I say I was in, I don't really care about the same things that most people care about now, but they're in the boat, the same boat. They got to make a life out of this. If anything, the current situation, because of what I had to do, which was resign, the current situation, their stock goes up. So yeah. I don't know. I don't have to tell you, folks. I was stuck in an absurdist nightmare. I was at the point talking to multiple cloud professionals who were wanting me to explain to them how they could solve my problem. And I have to say, you don't need to read Franz Kafka to know how fucked up that is. The food would make me sick. And what's funny is that the food looked healthy. Like, there was one day a week, oh my gosh, one day a week they had this really good Indian food. And anybody that works at Willy Wonka's will tell you about the Indian food there. But at this one particular cafeteria, it was really great. But other than that, picking something to eat at the cafeteria for me was like wading through a minefield. Every other item I would order, it ended up tearing the insides out of me. And frankly, I don't know what it was. It was almost like I was allergic to that place. And I talked about the propaganda. And generally speaking, I gotta say this. As a Christian, I never once felt remotely welcome there. I would hear these blue badges, these permanent employees joking about things, joking about red staters and flyover people, which I'm technically not. I'm not into that whole red-blue bullshit, but they are into it. They're into it. I'll miss the team. I will miss the team I worked with. They're good people. And I'll miss the new project manager. I think the guy truly wants to do the right thing. He clearly has motivation and intelligence, but that job was killing me. My explanation for the resignation was, I have health problems, and I have to resign immediately, and that's the truth. This job was fucking killing me. Now, is it possible that any software job at this point in the King County area would kill Uncle Dan eventually? Yeah. Pretty much, there is no better place. The grass is not greener. If you're thinking I'm one of those grass is greener schmucks, yeah, fuck you. I'm not. There is no greener grass. Amazon is not greener grass. Google is not greener grass. There is no greener grass software shop in Seattle. They are all fucked up. They are all Willy Wonka's now. They are all Willy Wonka's on the spectrum and kind of sociopathic software factories now. All of them. There's nothing special about the magic puzzle palace across the Great Sea. Yes, it's a silly little place in Redmond, but guess what? There are silly little places everywhere in King County now, thinking that they're masters of the universe, coming up with new ways to spy on their neighbors with some new app on their phone. And for those of you who've donated to me, you need to know this, because I've said this before, I'll say it again. I don't mind donations. I really don't. But don't donate to me because you think I need your help. I do and I don't. I will accept it, but I'm no fucking charity case, and this is not a fucking tragedy. Number one, I've saved up enough money from this most recent contract to cover me for a few months, and I think I've got a plan. So it's not dire straits for Uncle Dan. It's not the case that I'm spinning into the toilet bowl. Am I in a shitty mood today? Well, I've been in a shitty mood the last couple days because I'm not celebrating this. This is not something I wanted. I just literally got to work on Wednesday morning and felt like all my insides were about to explode. And you can say that's in my mind, or you can say that's in my body, or if you have a certain kind of subtle philosophical perspective, you could say yes. It's both and it's nothing. But the fact is, that job was killing me. There are no magical places, folks. Not for me, and maybe not for any of us. And here's the other thing, too. And I know that there are some of you who don't like to hear this because you would prefer that I just, you know, play the organ in my crappy way and tell little funny stories and not get serious. But you know I'm serious. I think we're entering a very difficult time in human history. I think technically we entered it more than 10 years ago, but most people didn't fucking notice. And if you want to, just pretend that I'm not religious. I am. I'm a Christian. But pretend for a moment that I'm not a Christian. I'm just Dan talking to you, one human being on planet Earth to another. As one human being on planet Earth to another, the weather is not normal, okay? Whatever's causing it, whether it's global warming, global cooling, Frickin' solar maximum, solar minimum, fucking cosmic rays from outer space, deep from the fucking galaxy, or not enough cosmic rays to cause clouds. I've seen so many explanations in the last few months trying to find one explanation that makes sense. The dude from Europe, the dude who claimed, the professor who claimed, I think he's a Danish professor, I think, I'm not sure, claiming that it's about cosmic rays making clouds. Well, some of that sounds nice. But whatever's doing it, the weather's for shit. The air quality is for shit. It is hard to breathe, folks. It is getting harder to breathe. It's getting to the point where an intelligent person might ask the question, should I purchase a breathing device? And maybe it's not that bad where you are, but here in good old Seattle, it's getting to be like that, and certainly for certain times of the year. So there's not a lot for me where I say to myself, oh, how much do I value my job at Willy Wonka's? I value it to the extent that it kept me from being homeless. I value it to the extent that it put food on my table. But do I truly think anybody or anything about that place gives a shit about any of us? Do I think that there's some great moral journey to be had being on Willy Wonka's team? No. I would walk around that place and it would have these signs saying Summer of One. Well, I can tell you the one that all these propaganda signs are talking about is not Jesus Christ. So whichever one it is they're promoting this summer, it wasn't the JC. This place is just terrible, but they're all terrible. I don't want to spend the whole podcast on this, but I had to get it out of my system because over the next few weeks, some of you will be saying, well, Dan, you've done a whole bunch of podcasts. Yeah, you know why? Because I got a lot of shit out of my system. Because working just for a few months in that dread place in Redmond fills me with poison, fills me with sawdust and broken glass and metal shavings, fills me with all of the riprap and the darkness you find by the wayside. That is what Willy Wonka's did to me. And if you want to know its real name, you can infer it. I've slipped up. I've said its real name. But almost like the Goat King, I almost prefer not to use its real name. And maybe that's fear, maybe that's not. Frankly, you'd have to be an idiot to not figure out who or what Willy Wonka's is. But yeah, every place is Willy Wonka's now. Every place is like that. Some are worse than others. Anyways, next topic. So, I don't know how many of you know about law enforcement or the history of law enforcement, but a long time ago, and I think Giuliani was involved in this in New York City, but a long time ago, there was this theory in law enforcement proposed called the broken windows theory. And keep in mind, if I say broken windows theory, some of you that are schooled in classical economics and Austrian theory and other types of libertarian economics might be thinking of Bastiat. No, this is not Bastiat. This is like almost in another complete hell universe away from that. Bastiat spoke about freedom and liberty and dignity and free commerce and trade. And when he talked about broken windows theory, he knew about Keynesianism before it came. He understood the bullshit of government spending. No, no, no. This broken windows theory has 100% to do with government spending. And it's a general rationalization for arresting people who break windows. And this is how the argument goes. If I have a community, let's say it's a town, and I allow people to break windows, people will do worse. It starts out with windows. Like, let's say there's a crime against breaking windows, and I decide to decriminalize the breaking of windows. Or for all intents and purposes, I stop arresting people who break windows. I will get more broken windows, but also I will get worse crimes. That's the broken windows theory, that if you give up on the small stuff, the big stuff gets worse too. And I gotta say, there is some logic behind this. I'm not gonna dispute the basic logic. What I will say is that if we lived in a free world, I don't think these would be real problems. It's just that we don't. And it's funny, because when you talk about broken windows applied to law enforcement, what they don't say is, if you actually had arrested some of the shitty bankers, I don't mean Bernie Madoff, you stupid fucks. I mean Lloyd Blankfein. I mean Jamie Dimon. I mean scumbags like that. I mean little Timothy Geithner. If we'd actually arrested fucks after the great financial crisis and put a few of these fucks on trial for crimes against humanity, which frankly, if you're a true believer in crocodile logic, we should have done. These were some of the scummiest people that ever lived, who did some of the most despicable things with money you can imagine. And yeah, a lot of people died and are still dying because of what they did. Broken Windows Theory says we should have arrested them. Broken Windows Theory says we should have arrested people way back when, under good old Bush and Reagan, during the fucking SNL crisis. Broken Windows Theory says that we should have fucking screamed bloody murder when Nixon closed the gold window. So yeah, I'm all loving this Broken Windows Theory, but if you follow the logic of it, it applies to other things as well. When I was a kid, when I was in high school, when you turned 18, you could grab your driver's license, go cross the border to Canada. All you needed was your Washington State driver's license, and you could drink because, hey, the drinking age in Canada was 18, which is fine, okay? This isn't the point of this little story. And then about 10 years later, there was the Millennium Bomber. And the Millennium Bomber basically, supposedly, was going to drive a bunch of explosives to LAX. Back then, before 9/11, we really, really did believe our crocodile bullshit. It's not that we don't today. We still do. But man, did we swallow it without questioning. And frankly, maybe that hasn't changed. But anyways, the government told us, the magical fucking crocodile said, oh God, there are going to be Millennium Bombers coming down from Canada across the border with Washington. The ergo, if you want to go to Canada now, you need a passport. Now, this makes no logical sense, because what you could have said, crocodile, is, well, shit, if you want to come into the U.S., we need to check your papers. But that's not what this fucking said. This said that in order to go to Canada, the opposite direction the Millennium Bomber was heading in, the opposite direction, you need a fucking passport. Broken Windows Theory says that when that decision was made by our crooked crocodile government, Americans should have stood up, screamed bloody murder, and said, no, we allow this, you're going to do worse. We allow this, and you're going to fuck us. Broken Windows Theory says no American should ever have allowed the income tax or the Federal Reserve Act. See, this is the thing, folks. I love Broken Windows Theory. The problem is the crocodile applies it very fucking selectively. Because if the crocodile applied Broken Windows Theory to the Constitutional Republic of the U.S., Broken Windows Theory says that when George Washington and the other scumfucks went after the whiskey producers during the Whiskey Rebellion, basically promoting a dark agenda that had nothing to do with the revolution, but essentially was about undoing it, Broken Windows Theory says that every fucking American during that time, just after the revolution, should have recognized another tyrant. Broken Windows Theory says that Hamilton was a scumfuck, that the Constitution was a fucking lie and a piece of IKEA furniture. Broken Windows Theory says that, yeah, as a good white American, you might have been doing great in the 19th century, that is if you were good and white and male and Christian. But if you were an Indian, a Native American living in the 19th century, Broken Windows Theory says that you were fucked. Because no American gave a shit about your rights. They did not care if during the 19th century, the United States literally invented the concentration camp. We called it a reservation. Folks, when you move a bunch of people and don't care if they make it there or not, aka Trail of Tears, and then when they get there, you don't give them enough food, not enough water, not enough shelter, that's a murder camp, that's a concentration camp. Yeah, good job. You've now learned that we invented the concentration camp. Broken Windows Theory says that if there were any men and women of good conscience during the early 19th century when they saw the first tribes being treated this way, Broken Windows Theory says there should have been another bloody revolution if we gave a shit. But we didn't. So yeah, I love the Broken Windows Theory bullshit as it's applied. And the reason why I bring this up is because I just saw, as I mentioned in a previous podcast, this fucking documentary called Seattle is Dying. And the basic message of it is that we have a problem with homeless. Well, that's basically true. Dear Seattle, Everywhere in the fucking country has a problem with homeless. If you don't think there's a problem in Indianapolis, you're a fucking moron who's never visited Indianapolis. It just turns out that where you have more economic activity, oh wow, we're learning here, you generally have more of the shit that everyone else has. Your quantity increases. And if you're in a crooked economy, if you're in a kleptocracy, if you're in sideways Seattle, where most of the money comes from the military-industrial complex or from fucking your neighbor one way or another, if you're in sideways Seattle, yeah, that's just the way it is. So I was watching this documentary, and basically it was mostly about putting the focus of attention on the homeless as the cause of the homeless. And it talked about this list of 100 criminals that Seattle couldn't possibly arrest and put in jail, which, again, I don't honestly know if there is a list of 100 criminals. There might be. And truly, out of the 11,000 or 15,000 or more likely 30,000 homeless in King County, I have no doubt you would find 100 that are douchebags. I guarantee you, if you go to Microsoft campus on any day of the week and you throw a rock and it hits somebody with a blue badge, there's a virtual 80% chance you hit a douchebag. Except for this douchebag is an acceptable one. This criminal, this crook, who will sell a piece of software to a school system, to a hospital, to the fucking military and claim it works. But internally, when they talk to Uncle Dan, they'll say, well, it should be able to do this, but we don't know how. Yeah, folks, there are douchebags on the streets, and there are douchebags at every software shop in Seattle, Washington, every fucking financial institution, oh, definitely every fucking bank. My God. Yeah, Seattle is dying makes the kind of broken windows argument that if we just arrest homeless people, if we can just, you know, magically get all the homeless people off the streets and put them in places and institutions modeled on what Rhode Island is doing. I don't even know if the fucking Rhode Island people know what they're doing. That somehow this will all get better. What I'm telling you, folks, is really simple, but I don't think anyone's going to listen until it's too late. Homeless people are a symptom, not a cause. Okay? In terms of cause and effect, they are not self-causing. It isn't like the days before, you know, essentially the days before Pasteur, who more or less revolutionized biology to some extent. It's not like the days before Pasteur where people thought that animals sort of spontaneously emerged from garbage. Like, you know, rags, dirty rags would spontaneously become rats. Folks, homeless people don't spontaneously come from nowhere. They are the result of an economy that's gone totally sideways, of a completely broken set of relationships. They are a result of an economy that says we don't have enough workers, ergo, we need more illegal aliens, while at the same time we got all these homeless. None of this makes any fucking sense. The only thing we import right now, in my opinion, in any quantity, is poverty. The only thing we produce in any quantity is debt. Broken windows theory says the following. When the first scumbag, back in the 70s, whenever it was, it could have been the 70s, but when the first scumbag proposed the hyper-financialization of human shelter, and let's talk about that before we get into the specifics, but what is human shelter? Human shelter is a need, not a want. And given how completely wonky the environment's becoming, human shelter is even more of a need. Okay? When the first motherfucker, and frankly, this could have been about the time that Freddie Mac and the Freddie Fannies were created. It could have been back then. It could have been when the government stepped in and created these massive loan institutions. But whenever it was, there was a point in the past when the first motherfucker proposed financializing shelter. We're going to turn your home into an investment. And nobody saw that as a problem. It's my home. It's my home. Why can't my home gain 15% value year on year? It's my home. And all that makes sense, folks, except for the money that was running that was not your money. That money was stolen. It was stolen from the future. The debt that was used to create your little massive home pyramid scheme that ultimately led to a lot of homeless people, to Seattle dying, to quote the myopic view of this stupid-ass documentary, You may have thought it was your home, but the dirty ass debt money was stolen money that was funding that little 15% year on year. Or whatever it was during the really great years. Broken windows theory says that whatever fuckers propose this, we should capture them. We should send them to an island at the very moment in the timeline. We should build a time machine, go back and capture them, because broken windows theory says that if we'd stop those fuckers, maybe we wouldn't have so many homeless. Maybe we wouldn't have such a sideways economy that could not possibly employ enough people doing the right kinds of jobs. How the fuck do you think you have an economy of building weapons and building technology to spy on your neighbors and flipping homes to each other? How the fuck do you think you build a society based on death and debt? How? There's no future in either death or debt. There isn't. How do you think you build a world based on that? Broken windows theory says that the first motherfucker that proposed that idea, maybe it really was Keynes. Somebody should have gone back and beat that guy over the head so he never ever wrote one fucking word, right? The truth about broken windows theory is it's based on the belief that we can change history, that if we pick the right little thing, we could change it all. And that might be true. But what I can tell you is we're dealing with a situation today. If you want to relieve the homeless problem in Seattle, it's really quite simple. Understand the paradigm. Apply your principles equally. The biggest welfare queens in the history of the fucking world were the banks in 2009. The biggest welfare queens in the history of the world were those billionaires who fucked the planet, who rightfully should have ended up in jail. And in America, for every one homeless person, if you believe the government, and I don't, but for every one homeless person, these welfare queens are holding on to four shadow inventory homes. No, they're not all in Seattle. They're not all perfectly located. But I figure out of four, at least one might be something you could give to a family on the streets. Broken windows theory says that taking a child off the streets increases their chance of not becoming a criminal, of not being abused, of not being raped. Broken windows theory says that if any family is on the streets tonight in Seattle, we're all scumbags for letting that happen. Yeah. That's what I want to say about broken windows theory. But the bottom line is this, folks. If you're wondering why we're a fucking tyranny, if you're asking yourself why this country has become such a shitbag tyranny, it's really quite simple. Broken windows theory says that when the first crocodile came along and said, "You know, wouldn't it be great if we had a committee for building roads?" somebody should have just told that person to keep walking. We bought into the great sin of government a long time ago. What did God say to Samuel in 1 Samuel chapter 8? What did God say? He said, "Samuel, they are not rejecting you. They are rejecting me." Broken windows theory says that the Hebrews, the chosen people in 1 Samuel chapter 8, made the wrong fucking choice. Give us a king. Give us a shiny king, and then we can have the shiny pyramid schemes and the shiny housing schemes, and then we can have the health and wellness false gods. Yeah. Broken windows theory says that the Hebrews, the chosen people, like so many times in the Old Testament, once again made the wrong fucking choice. Anywho, that's all water under the bridge, as Noah would say. I've already talked about it. I'm looking at my topics going in reverse because one of my books that had notes in it is at Willy Wonka's and I'm not going back to get it. So, before I start this next topic, I need to spin up my organ a little bit, maybe. Get my organ percolating. It's a little bit, it's good, it works, it's nice, I like it, but it's bigger than my Casio. So it's a little bit cumbersome in that sense, but it's got, you know, more keys and that's all great. I don't know. Yeah, that's enough of that. Anyways, one of the topics that comes up for me sometimes when people listen to my podcast is like, do you have any hope? Are you just a miserable old man without any hope? And that, it does come up. It's like, are you just a miserable old man living in the Gumbus Caves? Are you just a miserable old man living with the Gumbus Queens down off of 4th Avenue? Yeah, so am I just miserable and negative and there's no future? No. I have to say that we have far too many voices screaming today how great and perfect and everything is and how there are no problems. I kind of wish we had more balance. Sometimes I think the reason why I'm so strident and I yell so loudly is because too many of the voices are saying everything is fine, everything is okay, but that's also not true. It might not be the end of the world, but folks, everything is not okay. If you think things are okay, you do not have eyes to see, you do not have ears to hear, you do not feel. Everything is not okay. There are some serious problems, some of which may be so bad that there's a fairly good chance that half the people you know just simply won't be there in 10 years. And that's my honest belief about the future. But I'll also tell you this. Human beings have gone through many, many travails throughout history. Now, let's assume you're not religious. If you're religious, you don't need to hear this speech. If you're a Christian and you've read your Bible and you've read your Old Testament, you don't need this speech. You can turn off the podcast now because you know the truth. You know that human beings have been through all sorts of tests all throughout time. Yes, sometimes we made the right choices, and it's in the book. Sometimes we made the wrong choices. Guess what? A lot more of that is in the book, in the Bible. A lot more bad choices. A lot more examples of what not to do. I mean, if you want to talk about examples in the Bible, there are so many examples of fucking up. Very few examples of doing it right. If you're a person who's an atheist or believes in the purely materialist explanation of reality, that's okay too. You, as an atheist, as someone who studied natural history, knows that the human race has had multiple times in its history where it nearly died out. Roughly 70,000 years ago, and I believe that the caldera is, I think the caldera I'm describing is either near or called Toba. But somewhere in, I think, Southeast Asia or near Micronesia or someplace around there near Malaysia, there's a giant caldera. And this caldera cooked off about 70,000 years ago. And at the time, the human race was doing okay. But by the time this event was over, the human race, according to some anthropologists, was reduced to around 10,000 people. And 10,000 people might have barely been enough people for a sustainable gene pool. Like, we came very close to becoming extinct. And arguably, it probably wasn't the first time. Like, just because we don't know about it doesn't mean it didn't happen. The fact is this. Human beings, whether you look at this from a Christian perspective or from some other religious perspective or certainly from a scientific perspective, human beings have cut it close to the edge many times. And this time in human history could very well be like that, which is to say, it might not be the end of the world, but it very well could be like the world described by, you know, Barbara Tuchman in A Distant Mirror. It very well could be the world of the 14th century crisis. It could very well be a world where everything goes wrong and it looks like it's Kingdom Come and Revelations. It could feel like that. Yeah, so I don't really know what's going to happen next, but what I'm telling you is this. All human beings do not have to be wiped out for you to feel like the world is ending. If you were a young person living in Yugoslavia during the 1990s, which, oh, by the way, is not ancient history. If you were just a young Serb or a young Croat, just a kid in the former Yugoslavia. I say former because it no longer exists, like so many great ideas that came out of World War I. Yeah, if you were a kid in the former Yugoslavia, that is no longer a thing, you might have thought that the world was coming to an end. And from your perspective, it probably was. If you were a young St. Augustine living at the end of the Western Roman Empire in the 5th century, late 4th century, early 5th century AD, if you were that young St. Augustine seeing the glory, the power, the history of the Western Roman Empire, which for many was the Roman Empire, even though the Eastern Empire lasted another 1,000 years, if you were that person, you might think the world is coming to an end. In 2012, my sister Nancy's world came to an end. In 2010, my mom's world came to an end. In 1993, my dad's world came to an end. This year, my Uncle Jimmy's world came to an end. He's a good guy. Brilliant guy. Brilliant, brilliant businessman. Great entrepreneur. The kind of entrepreneur I think did it right and had principles, which saying a lot these days. Everybody's world ends. The question some of you are asking, is it possible that we've entered a period of human history that happens periodically? Like I said, 14th century crisis, that wasn't that many centuries ago. Is it possible that the whole human race has entered a period of human history where a lot of people's worlds will end at kind of the same time? Yeah, it's possible that we're entering a period of history where a lot of worlds will end at exactly the same time, or more or less, within a few days. And that doesn't mean the end of the world. It just means that sometimes times get hard. Now, I'm going to give you a way out of this mess. I'm going to give you a way out because you have to change your perspective. You can't change the reality. God can, but we can't. We can pray to God. We can say, Lord in heaven, protect my family. Lord in heaven, protect this world. Lord in heaven, take the mess that the human race has created. Take all the wars and all the poison and all the death and all the bodies. Take all the evil we've created and wash it away and fix it for us. You can say that all you want to. That doesn't mean you're going to get it. It doesn't mean God doesn't love us. God does love us, but he gave us free will. And while it's true, in the Old Testament, there are lots of examples of God stepping in to help the chosen people. It looks a lot like training wheels to me, folks. And when our Lord Jesus Christ died on the cross, the training wheels were taken off, folks. I'm sorry. They were taken off. You got to put on your big boy pants at this point, and that's what the human race has to do. So I'm going to give you a way out. And you have to think about this. And even if you're an atheist, you can still focus on this escape hatch because I think it's valid. The most exciting things you're ever going to encounter in this life, the most interesting things, happen in the turbulence. They happen in the noisy regions, the boundary regions, the conditions of strangeness. Some of the most interesting places are the places no one ever looks. When I was a kid, I used to love going down to the beach and finding a big old rock and flipping it over, because what you would see underneath was amazing. You would see all this life, all these little crabs and all these worms and all these creatures. Of course, what I did was probably horrible, because to them I was flipping over their ecosystem. Yeah, you know, you learn as you get older. The little creatures of the beach knew that young Danny was coming. The great herald sung his song. Head down to the bunkers, people. Daniel's on the beach. Yeah, so I did. I flipped over rocks. But the beach is a boundary region. And there are some interesting things at the beach. The point is, some of those interesting things you're going to encounter in this life are on the fringes, in the cracks, in the boundary regions, in the noise, in the turbulence, and yes, even in the pain. Some of the most interesting things, maybe the greatest treasures of your whole life, are going to be found in places that everyone else ignores. What have I said recently and I think is true? It doesn't make me brilliant. But I've said it and I'll say it again. There are things today that people think are worthless that will be worth their weight in gold tomorrow. One of those is family. One of those is love. What, and I mean actual love, I don't mean sex. Not that sex is bad, but actual love. Peace will be worth its weight in gold if you can find it. And there are many things today that people think are so important and so invaluable and so critical. Many things at Willy Wonka's that people just could not live without. But in reality, they are just worthless pieces of shit. Yeah. If you want to know the escape hatch of the eternal dilemma of woe is me, my life has no meaning, and there's nothing but bitterness and death, if you want to know, here's the truth. It isn't in the peaceful times, the easy times, that we become who we're supposed to be, because generally speaking, we don't test ourselves enough. It isn't to say we're not who we are. It's just that we're usually the superficial version of ourselves. You know, the easy version, the version that gets along with everyone because fuck, you have to. But when the turbulence hits, and it will hit, you're going to find out truth about yourselves and other people, but you're also going to discover hidden truths about the world. When the turbulence hits, like a wave, like a wind, it'll blow away the dust, blow away the debris, and all the truths that have been around you for your entire life will reveal themselves when the turbulence hits. And I don't mean end-of-the-world turbulence. When my sister Nancy died of cancer, that was a windstorm for my soul. A whole bunch of bullshit had been built up for decades, a whole bunch of rationalizations. Oh, there is no God, and it's all just glimbus, and quantum mechanics, and physics explains everything, and belief in heaven is just a temporal lobe seizure. It's just a defect in the brain. That you can put a pilot into a centrifuge and they will, you know, lose all oxygen from their brain and they'll experience God, therefore God's in the brain. Watching my sister deal with cancer, as imperfect as maybe she thought it was, she dealt with it bravely. She dealt with it, I think, very bravely. In fact, many of us, her siblings, were the ones running around not knowing what to do, including me. There was a grace in the way that my sister Nancy approached death. And I think a part of that came from the fact that she believed in God. Now, I can't tell you the exact moment that I gained my faith in God, but it was during a time when my life was a storm, when there was nothing but turbulence. And in all that, I found a few truths, and one of which is this. Your life has meaning. My life has meaning. Even if it's infinitesimally small. A little act of kindness on your part or my part can change the world. It doesn't take everyone to do it, but enough people that could change everything. There is a God in heaven. And the God is kind. And the God is love. And the God has patience, although I wonder sometimes how much patience. And if you read the Bible, probably not a lot. I found truths that saved my life in the turbulence. You will find truths in the turbulence. You will find opportunities. You will find hope. Believe it or not, hope is often hiding in the strangest fucking places. There are a lot of people who poo-poo hope, and I know, I get why. Because hope seems pointless. Like, why would you be hopeful about anything? Just deal with your grunkus today. And that's kind of true, but I'm an idealist. You can tell me that the world can only be a slave camp, and I will keep saying nobody has to be a slave. And you can march me to the slave camp, and I will keep saying no one has to be a slave. If you're looking to me to believe in the devil and to believe in slavery, you're looking the wrong way. I never will. Now, I don't know what's going to happen next. I have had some honest and serious conversations with people I care about, and there are days I wake up, I think we're in the great game. And when I say the great game, I mean that final phase of revelation where God's plan completely unfolds and everything is resolved. I think we're in the great game. Sometimes I do. I don't know for a fact, and I'm not a biblical scholar, and I'm not a prophet. I'm just a fucking burned out middle-aged programmer jackass in Little Saigon, Seattle, currently between jobs. But I think we're in the great game. And I also say this, like in Matthew 24:22, And I feel like reading it. I really do. I'm going to read this because it bears reading. Matthew. This is the book of Matthew in the New Testament, 24, verse 22. If those days had not been cut short, nobody would be saved. But for the sake of the elect, those days will be shortened. I gotta say, folks, whether it's economic news, whether it's news of military conflict, and frankly, whether it's the news that you only need to tune into by looking up at the fucking sky or walking outside and just knowing what's happening to the beautiful life that God gave us. Things are moving fast, folks. This car that we're in called the Human Project, yeah, Thelma and Louise are doing crack. And yeah, they definitely have the pedal to the metal. Things are moving fast. And so in that sense, I kind of think that this particular verse makes a lot of sense. Like, things are moving so fast and things are getting so potentially terrible, especially with respect to the environment, that either there is a God or what we're looking at is the extinction event for the species called Homo sapiens. And a whole bunch of other species, too. So that's what I want you to get at here, though, is this is a strange time in the following sense. If you're a religious person, if you're a Christian like me, and you ask yourself, how does this fit with the Bible? I'll tell you right now. I think you're going to live in a time where the faithful will be tested. Because the scenario, and I've gone over this scenario before, but I'm going to go over it again before I close out this podcast. The scenario is the following. Some great crisis occurs. Yeah, so some great crisis occurs. And I personally think the perfect candidate crisis, because it covers most of the main issues in Revelations with respect to the great tribulations, with respect to things like starvation and plague. The great candidate for this would be that kind of major methane release event in the Arctic Circle. It would be abrupt climate change. And you would have a period of time, let's say a month or two, where everyone on Earth just stews in the juices that we are going to soon die, the evidence is around us, the temperatures are going up, and we're all going to be dead, and that's it. And in those days, Christians will be tested. Christians will be tested, just like Peter. I will be tested, you will be tested. And then, after some period of time, some person, male, female, could be Zhuh. Could be the magical Gumbus queen called Zhuh. It could be a trans-migrated, desexualized, non-gendered human who had been working in a lab someplace, somewhere, has come up with a solution to all of our problems. However, there's a catch. And the catch is this person will blame the Christians. This person will say we need one world government, one world currency, one world religion, and Christians will be further tested. Because here will be an example of a savior. Someone with technology, someone that's not even male or female, the perfect emblematic hero of the desexualized, degendered, dehumanized world. And in the days that follow, people will be asked to choose sides. You will either choose to follow the great princess king queen called Zhuh. Zhuh will rule from a castle someplace in Barbados. Zhuh will demand that we have one world religion and that the French bulldog be our cursed idol. Zhuh will be called Zhuh, not he or she, just Z-H-E. Yeah. And we can joke about it. But in those days, if those days come, and I think they're coming, Christians will be hated, Christians will be blamed. Just like Nero, before the great fire in Rome, Christians will be amped up as the bad guys. And then when the calamities hit, it will be the Christians. Oh, the Christians did this and the Christians did that. Oh boy, those damn Christians, they're the ones who built all the nuclear reactors and created all the nuclear weapons. It was the fucking Christians who dropped bombs on two major Christian cities in Japan during World War II. That was Christians. Or was it? The funny thing about finding your faith at a time like this is that it is both a problem and an opportunity. It's a problem in the sense that it is the least convenient time in the current history of America and probably the world to be a Christian. Because just about everybody wants to blame us for everything. If a Muslim dude rapes somebody in Sweden, some Christian is to blame, clearly. If a banker takes advantage of some community with some shitty bond deal, clearly it was a Christian. If another war gets started in Iran and a bunch of people are set on fire, my gosh, my gosh, my gosh, if only those Christians could go away. If you are a person of faith at this time, and you've just found it, you've picked a really inconvenient time to become a Christian. You really have. Very inconvenient. But it's also an opportunity, and I'm going to close it out here and try to make this a kind of positive podcast despite its negative beginnings. In all this noise and all this chaos, and there is chaos and there's going to be more, in all of this fractured and brokenness, there is an opportunity to not just be saved, but to save others. And I don't mean saving people so they can have more stuff. I mean, I'm not against having stuff. I am about as staunch an anti-communist as you'll ever find. But it really isn't about more stuff at this point. It's about more soul. It's about trying to convince your neighbors that maybe there are things around them today that they don't see, that are right there in front of them, that are more valuable than all the gold on planet Earth. So as you go out this weekend to enjoy Labor Day and to see friends or drink beer, to discuss the world, hopefully you won't get into too many fights with your friends and family, but boy, that seems almost unavoidable these days, you know, alcohol or not. As you're out there, think of this way. It's true. Times can get fucking crazy. And it's true. Everything can look like it's turning sideways and upside down. But if you see all this, if you see the sideways, if you still know the difference between right and wrong, despite the fact that everyone's heading in the wrong direction, it means that you're probably heading in the direction of Christ, I hope. And that's the only right direction left. Have a great weekend.